Yes, I guess this could be considered episode one of a mini series. Would that be a proper way to frame
it?
Yeah. Mega series.
Yes, megafauna at the mega series. So Eric kind of spawned this idea, like we're gonna look at fitness not just from like the body side of it, which I think typically tend to focus on as CrossFit coaches, but fitness in our spiritual lives, our personal lives, our financial lives, our family lives, all those things are kind of intertwined. So I think it's meaningful to have people on that, you know, can help explore those ideas a little differently than we could.
Yeah, like almost like specialists in that realm.
Yeah.
Subject matter experts.
Yeah. Yes.
The official term. So today we have Chris Eck. Chris, say hi.
Hi. Good to be here today. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And is you're a member at CFS at our Milford location.
At CrossFit Suhegan, and I've been a pastor now for over 22 years, kind of walking people through their spiritual life, and working in churches, and kind of helping people grow spiritually. So
yeah,
that's what I do.
Before we started rolling here, we're talking about how that's kind of a neglected, in ways, especially with athletes, could be a neglected part of their life, is that you know, the flip side of the coin, not just the physical stuff. That might be a good place to jump off, you know, with what you brought up a little earlier.
Yeah, I think in today's world, with all the demands and all the challenges, if we're not taking time to develop those spiritual resources, those inner resources inside our lives, we're often then kind of, when those challenges come, we don't have the resources to be able to deal with those with those parts of life. And so today, I have one thing that does not work that we all try at some point to kind of strengthen our inside, and then five spiritual practices and kind of how they help us live in this modern world with a little bit more strength on the inside.
Cool.
Right on.
So you were mentioning you had a story about like how fitness...
Yeah.
Kind of, or how you found CrossFit.
So my CrossFit beginning, I was on a mission trip in Honduras. We were building a camp there for kids that was kind of meant to be a leadership training ground for kids growing up in Honduras. The trip was very, very physical. It was the second one that I had been on there. And first day, I kind of made it through. The second day, I kind of made it through. We had 20-somethings on this trip, and they'd like walk around with their shirts off all day, looking great. And then we had like a 65-year-old, 70-year-old on this trip. And third day, they handed me a shovel and a huge pick, and they said, start this 50-foot trench 2 feet deep through all this clay to be able to lay down some electrical piping to this part of the camp that we were building. And that day we were all on that project, and those 20-something guys, like, they could work all day. Those 65 and the 70-year-old guy, like, doctor, teacher, but they still biked and did stuff. Like, they lasted the day. I did not last the day. It was awful for me. I hadn't done anything physically in years, and it showed that day. And I got back to bed that night like pretty discouraged, and just about how my body responded that day. And I remember laying in bed that day, and I said to myself, never again do I want my mind ready to do something, and my heart ready to do something, and my soul want to do something, but my body not be able to keep up. And so that day I said, I'm going to go home, I'm going to hire a trainer. And that's what I did. I went home that week and I hired a trainer. And he kind of then introduced me to some of the CrossFit stuff in that gym. And then it was probably about 8 months later that I went and found a CrossFit gym. And but I recognized that my outside was not strong enough to live up to that day. And I think that when it comes to our inner life, we can come across stuff, things that are just unexpected, problems, even deeper things that we've been living with on the inside for a long time, that's keeping us from being strong on the inside when those major life challenges come.
Mm. Yeah, I think like it's kind of a funny juxtaposition with like what we were talking about earlier with the athletes. A lot of us probably struggle with that opposite experience where like our bodies can do a lot of what we want them to do at this point, but we encounter something that's, you know, spiritually taxing or stressful to the inside, you know, environment, and we don't have those. We haven't trained that way, you know, but yeah. We should.
We all have an inner life, and the inner life is that constant stream of thoughts. That inner life is our insecurities. And it's great when our inner life, like peace, would be an inner life quality. I like when peace just kind of flows through me. And then that comes out, even maybe during a stressful time. But then there's also some like anger. Anger is an inner life quality. And when that just kind of flows through us and then a stress comes, well, now that gets displayed on the outside as well. So how do we train our inside life so that it can be more of a peaceful and calm environment, so when those life things come, we're able to live from that place instead of maybe living from those insecurities or those angers or a place of envy or things like that? How do we train the inside to be able to live better from those places?
Yeah, I kind of view spirituality, for myself at least, as, I mean, the eternal quest for equanimity despite circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no mental perturbance that I can't pretty quickly shake off. And it's not even about achieving happiness for me, it's about achieving contentment. Because, I mean, with happiness comes highs, but then from highs come lows. So I'm more seeking just to be level. And it's funny that you speak to the, it kind of speaks to the volume of how the mind-body-spirit connection, because even though you probably spiritually and mentally that you might have been developed when you were over in Honduras for the mission trip, your body wasn't keeping up, so then that brought the spirit down as well. So it kind of says a lot about how just unquestionably connected they are.
It's all connected, even, you know, heart, mind, soul, and strength.
Yeah.
Heart is that will that we live with. Our mind is that intellectual part.
Yeah.
The body is our strength, and then the soul, and that's what kind of drives it all. That's what integrates all those things together.
Yeah.
Would you, so CrossFit kind of defined like fitness and health for me in a way. It was like work capacity across broad time, modal domains, and then add over time for like that health element. And I was thinking about how you could like define that as for like the spiritual health or spiritual fitness, like if there's any way to define that. So I don't know if anybody wants to take a stab at that. I was almost thinking about
spiritual,
like,
fitness.
Yeah, like how, like what would you substitute work capacity, like can you use that definition almost, like what is work capacity in spirituality and what are broad time and modal domains kind of thing? Like,
I think what you said just about a minute ago was pretty, like equanimity despite the external circumstance.
Yeah.
Like, I think that covers a lot of that, is, you know, retaining that like peace, inner, I don't know if that's a close enough synonym, you know,
it is, yeah.
Peace despite like, you know, the chaos of life or the impact of things. And so that could account for like the time in the modes,
right? Like, you know, no matter what's thrown at you, any modality.
We've talked about this before, but I found with things that anything that I find great joy from, whether that's skiing, whether that's working out, whether that's hiking, it all zaps me to a place of presence. And I think that's what I've discovered is where I am at the most at peace, if I can find myself in this moment. And where I find the most suffering from is if I get zapped into other moments outside this. Because 99.9% of the time, at least in our lives probably, the moment is peaceful and tranquil. But it's when we start suffering about what's going to happen and what's happened is where it starts, we start getting disturbed over things.
Mm-hmm. And I think I've said this before on this podcast, maybe not in such a well-framed out thought, but like the other kind of alternative concept of fitness and CrossFit is general physical preparedness. So it's like we can throw any task at you and you can take it on with decent, you know, ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to just broaden that perspective to like general spiritual preparedness. So like any, as you're saying, any external thing could happen, any event could happen, but you are at least like have a baseline of preparedness and that put togetherness to like juggle it and be okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And I think like for me running the business and stuff, it was important to define values, because when external things come at you or whatever, you can kind of go back to your values, and it makes you make better decisions because you have those values defined, and so you can kind of lean on those as opposed to just making like a reaction or an emotional response type of thing. So I think, I don't know, maybe values are a big part of spirituality too, and I think maybe certain religions might have like their values kind of lined up, and that's like a template for people to follow. But I think you can find those in a lot of different ways, your values. But yeah,
I think spiritually too, we have to hold on to that word of training, that we're training our souls, we're training our hearts to do things. It's not like trying. Some of these spiritual practices are more things we do intentionally, so when these moments hit us, we're like prepared to do them. And we don't think of training very much when we think of spirituality, but a lot of these practices and spiritual practices are just training, just like we do here at the gym for things that come our way.
Yeah, I've long had a mantra that goes salvation through suffering, and there's a lot of peace to be had when you can make yourself, I mean, physically suffer. But however, with that being said, is what I found to be far harder than suffering physically and adapting yourself to the present is just sitting still and allowing your emotions and allowing your thoughts to just be there, because that's a much harder task than to kind of distract yourself with physical suffering. It's the sitting still that can often be the most troublesome for people, most problematic.
So that's the first one that I had just talking about today, because you look through all major faiths and religions, silence, prayer, and meditation is one of those practices.
Oh, that's serendipitous, I know.
And they push back against all the noise of the culture around us.
Yeah.
When I led a ropes course, we used to have this game we used to play where I'd separate the room, create like a 15-foot area in the middle of the room with ropes on either side, and then I'd fill that center of the room with all these obstacles, different cones and things like that. We'd blindfold one person on one side, and then the other person on the other side had to yell commands across to the person, like 1 foot forward, step to the right, and they had to lead them successfully across the little maze in between. But you would often have 20 people yelling commands all at the same time. Yeah. And it's almost impossible to hear a voice that you're trying to focus in on when everybody's yelling.
What voice do you focus in on?
And what voice do you focus in on? And without that quiet and in our lives, we just fill our life with all these other voices,
yeah,
whether they're on Instagram or they're on the news, and then that becomes the conversation in our head. That ability to sit in quiet and sit in silence now allows us to hear what's going on in our own life, allows us to hear a little bit of that reflection, allows us to pray if that's what you need to do, allows us to meditate. And so I think that's one of those spiritual practices, and that allows us, if we get really good at sitting in silence on our own, now all of a sudden you walk into a loud and crazy room, you're not sucked into all that.
Right.
Like, you can maintain a sense of calm.
You can root yourself into where you're at.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, I mean, that just attracts people in the room if you can maintain that sense of calm in the midst of all the noise.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the, Levi, when you said, it's one of the harder spiritual practices, because to sit alone with your own thoughts.
Yeah, oh. I'm very adept at physical suffering, but
yeah.
What was one of the hardest things in my life is to lean into just sitting still and just being. That it's a very hard practice, but it's well worth endeavoring upon, because it bulletproofs your mind and your spiritual wellness for whatever comes at you.
What have you guys done as practice for that? Like, is it like you start with 2 minutes and then you build up, or like what are some tools that you guys have used?
I mean, I have, you don't want to get too ambitious with what you start off with, because it's more about consistency than it is about intensity of any given session. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can start off with 5 minutes. I mean, you can start off with 2 minutes if you want, to mm-hmm. see how long you can sit still and not let a thought just pervade your mind. Just sit there with nothingness. You'll find a minute is impossibly hard. the first time you start. But then that minute can grow into 2 minutes. And the thought might come, and then you just observe it. You just let it go. You don't stay with it. You just notice it. Don't criticize yourself over the thought coming. And then you let it go. I mean, I actually take, knowing this about myself, and I tend to lean in towards what I discover is are going to be the hardest things for me, is that I make time, carve out times of my day where I just have silence. Where I'll be driving in the car and I'm not like turning on Spotify or some audiobook or whatever, I have to listen to silence. And I just sit there with it. I try not to let my mind go running all over the place. I just sit there in complete silence. Or if I'm going outside, I'm not putting on a book, I'm just being outside, hearing noises, looking at trees. That I do a lot of like yoga outside, and I don't try not to distract myself with any other thing that's going on besides what I'm doing. Kind of like little mental aid stations. That I just kind of capitalize on to practice just being there without having to distract myself while being there. Or even sitting in line at a grocery store. Don't look at my phone. Just be there. Right?
Yeah. That's a really, I think, a really simplistic but really effective way to start dosing that in. And you said this, but it's so important for us, like, modern people is to, like, carve it out. Because if you just say, some point today I'm going to take my 5 minutes, but then you just live your day, it's going to pass you by, right? So unless it's like, you know, you have it down somewhere and it's scheduled for, I think that's a smart way to start, is just like, you know,
yeah.
Put 5 minutes in your calendar. Hey, your alarm goes off. All right, I got to unplug whatever's in my ears and go sit in this room or go sit outside or whatever I got to do.
And make it a digestible dose of what you can realistically manage with consistency.
Mm.
Don't start with 15 minutes.
What? 15
yeah,
minutes?
Start with 5. And I know for me, when I first started this, having, having a place that was that quiet space was good for me. Like, I knew the desk where I did homework wasn't a good place for me to sit in quiet. Laying in bed was not a great place for me to sit in quiet because I'd either fall asleep or... So I actually set aside a place in high school in my room where... That's when I sat in that chair, that was like my place for quiet. That was my place to not have anything on and to just sit. And then I think as you get better, like that's where, okay, now I'm doing this in my car. Now I'm doing this outside. Like you get used to sitting in that quiet and now you can kind of expand from there. But if you set aside a time, set aside a place, and then at times I'll just even have like a little note card or notebook next to me where it's just like, you're sitting there in quiet and you're kind of like, oh, you got to call the heating person. Well, yeah. Then you start that. And then I just like write it down real quick and that gets it out of my mind and allows me to kind of sit.
Yeah, kind of observe it, release it,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good tip because that's my biggest struggle with just sitting in silence is I instantly think about like what needs to get done.
Right.
And then...
Before you were like, I want to watch TV.
Yeah.
I have things to do.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like that notepad thing. I'm going to steal that.
Second one that I brought, and this is one I figured would be good to talk about because it's so popular in kind of the diet world today, but really started as a spiritual practice, and that's the practice of fasting. And fasting was always a spiritual practice way before it was a diet fad. And I think if you use it as a diet fad, great, but... Get some good instruction from either doctor or one of the coaches here if you're going to use fasting as something, as a diet fad. If you're going to use it more as a spiritual practice, what fasting does is it teaches us to not give in to every single appetite that comes into our mind, every single desire that comes into our mind. It trains us in self-control. I did a fair amount of fasting when I was in my 20s. And I would just do simple 24-hour fasts. I'd usually start it after dinner at night and then go through the morning. You know, you wake up the next morning, you don't get your cup of coffee, and that's like a pretty horrible feeling first thing. And all of a sudden, at one point, your stomach now starts to get those little hunger pangs. That's not because you're starving, but because your stomach is like a spoiled child and is so used to the comforts of food and saying yes to food all the time and constantly need to be fed. And now all of a sudden, if you start going through 24 hours of fasting, you start to learn like, okay, I'm listening to myself in an uncomfortable time, but I'm not giving into my appetites and not giving into my desires. And that allows us then to build some of those muscles of self-control that we need.
Yeah, it seems as though that is even more important now because those appetites are so easily reached now.
Yeah, there's such an abundance.
Like, you're right. Hungry a couple hundred years ago, it's like, oh, I'm hungry, I'm going to have to go out and kill something, or like, you know, start a fire to cook this thing. But now it's like you just open your fridge and it's right there. So it's like, and that's not just food, it's all the appetites that you're talking about. They're just like right there. So it seems like it's even more of a, it could be even more of a useful tool now with these things at our fingertips.
And you can do different kind of fasts, like do an online shopping fast. I did that one time for 30 days. I did not put anything in my Amazon cart. And like, that was a wonderful experience and saved me a lot of money. And it made me like not so, you know, I wasn't impulse buying as much after those 30 days. And so that was
good. It has a lasting effect, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it has a lasting effect on us. You can do a media fast. You can do a political fast in our day. That can be good for us.
A lot of people need that, I think.
Yeah. There was a Dutch study done that says
you require some people.
Yeah. Yeah, because our happiness, there's a Dutch study that our happiness goes down like 6% every single time we watch like a hard news show.
Yeah.
Addicted to doing it.
Yeah. So I think that there are different fasts that we can do as well that kind of build some of those muscles of saying no to things that we normally maybe always say yes to, or kind of giving in all those efforts.
Exercising the muscle of restraint there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of exercising muscles, here's one that I see as a coach, and this isn't applicable to the general population, I don't think, because a lot of times they need the opposite, like they need a kick in the butt for a movement. But with like CrossFitters who get so deeply entrenched in that day-to-day grind, to have them be like, hey, you need to take a deload week, or you need to like just go
easy. Go outside, go play, go do something else.
Put the barbell down for a day, like, and just having that detachment. Like, you need to recover. At some point, you can't just hammer 365 days a week, right? You need to like step away from the intensity of things once in a while, and that's only going to make it more effective when you come back. But
so, sometimes I feel like that's a connection to not having enough of a development of the spiritual side of things, right? Because they do get some like cortisol dumps from coming and working out, but they wouldn't need so much that cortisol dump if they were able to have some stillness in their life and still be okay for the day.
It's a tough one. Like, especially, I don't ever want to tell someone like, "Don't come to the gym." But it's like
if you're that person that works out 5-6 days a week every week for years, then you're probably the person that needs to take some time off.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've been that person for a very long time, so I can safely say.
Yeah.
I can recognize when other people are that person too.
Yeah. And I'm saying that's, I'm speaking from a place of personal experience. Where like, hey, I probably need a chill for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this next one fits this conversation and kind of some of our modern life as well. And it's called the discipline of slowing. And slowing is kind of the practice in response to this fast-paced life that we live. Remember that experiment like in high school in science that you used to do where you like added sugar to the water and then the sugar would dissolve, and then you add a little bit more sugar and the sugar would dissolve, and eventually it hits this point where the sugar won't dissolve anymore. But then if you spun the water faster, you could dissolve more sugar into the water. And the faster you spun the water, the more sugar would dissolve in the water until you stopped the water. And then all of a sudden, all that sugar that you had put in there had come out. And that happens so much in our lives, that we're trying to move at such a speed to fit more and more of life in a shorter and shorter times. And we're just not meant to run that fast all the time. It causes us to hurry from one thing to the next, or to rush from one thing to the next. Busyness is one thing. We're not going to eliminate the busyness.
Yeah.
But I found if I could eliminate hurry and rush from my life, that was a huge improvement to my inner resources. I was just like addicted to getting to places right on time instead of early, and trying to rush through all aspects of life. And so when I learned this discipline of slowing, that now all of a sudden helped me kind of calm down in the midst of a pretty busy and fast-paced life.
Mm. That one hits home a little bit.
Yeah, I think a big part of that too, like we talked about earlier, is how you react to being in a rush, or being stuck in traffic or being in line at the grocery store, like, because the outcome isn't going to change whether you're angry, upset, frustrated about it. The outcome's not going to change, but you can change like how you internalize things. And so I think looking at, like, for me, I used to get, you know, in my early 20s, I'd get so frustrated in traffic. If someone was driving slow in front of me, I'd be like, you know, thinking,
this is the end of me. I'll never recover from this.
Yeah. I think getting like Jeeps and trucks and slow cars like helped with that. Because I used to be like a big sports car, like motorcycle guy. And I think that's helped with it. But I think that's a part of it too, is like just purely how you react to things. I think maybe, I don't know if that's part of slowing or just time blocking better or what, but
like I would, when I lived in Chicago, everything was faster in Chicago than in New Hampshire. And I would pull up to, I'd get to a light in the middle of Chicago and like you'd assess, okay, which lane is going to get off faster? Yeah. You know, like, oh, there's a Ferrari right. in this lane. I'm stuck in that lane. And I was like, oh, I got to get behind the Ferrari. And then if you actually did get off the line faster, I was thrilled. Like, I had beat the system.
I'm like, look at that squirrel.
And then same with the grocery line. Like, I would get to the grocery line, I'm like, okay, what's going to be the fastest line? Yeah. And look at what was in everybody's cart. And then and then I'd get in the line and I'd keep track of all the other lines to see if I choose.
Yeah. And you need to run over again. Yeah. 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 I screwed myself.
Did I make the right decision? And it's just a horrible way to live. Yeah. Because then if you don't get through,
they have lost minutes off of it.
You're mad at somebody who like didn't have their cashier coupons ready. You don't even know them.
Writing a check.
Yeah, that's right. And so I went on this thing where I intentionally started to choose the lane that I thought would go slower. Or I'd choose the longest line in the grocery store and just be patient and say, now's my time just to wait. I think the biggest difference that I made in my life...
You could do self-checkout and just be really slow. Yeah, that's right.
I
get other people mad at you.
I still like other people to do it for me. I think the biggest change that I made was I would always get places right on time. And I now had planned to be there 5 to 10 minutes earlier. And what a gift you give yourself when you can walk into someplace 5 to 10 minutes earlier. You then don't have to make excuses for being late. It's like, oh, it was so-and-so's fault for being late. That was probably your own fault for being late.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of excuses for being late here.
And so just giving yourself that gift of 5 minutes of arriving someplace early, you do that 4 or 5 times a day, you've now eliminated 5 to 6 times of stress in the midst of your day.
Yeah, cortisol spikes.
By arriving places early.
Yeah.
And I think in the CrossFit world, we are like addicted to that rush and to that speed a little bit. And, you know, I think CrossFitters, we could probably watch, you know, CrossFitters, they have this, they're pretty driven, pretty highly successful in their parts of life. They don't slow down easily. Mm-hmm. So to have this discipline of slowing intentionally, it's going to help in all parts of life.
Tempos, baby.
Tempo. Yeah.
There's some nice synergy going on right now.
I do it lifting sometimes where if I'm feeling really beat up that day, I'll just like slow down a back squat or a front squat and not go heavy that day and just do them slower than normal.
Yep.
And you get such good benefit.
There's a great value
of that. Mm-hmm. So not everything here at the gym needs to be faster. I told Eric, like, that's why I don't like those imams. They like, you know, every minute on the minute, they stress me out. Because I'm going to like, chill out. Oh, I just got to counsel rush from one thing to the next. Yep. And so...
Imams could be a different kind of miserable. Yeah. You got the right thing going on for them.
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely the slowing. I'm going to try to pick up on that because there are times where, like, every once in a while, things will just naturally slow down. Like, I don't have a ton to do very once in a while. And when those times happen, that's when I find myself more, like, panicky and stressed.
Yeah, for I'm sure, like, yeah. Like, why don't I? Doing something.
Yeah. And so that'll be, when those times come up, that'll be a good time to, like, look inward and be like, what's going on, you know?
Don't underestimate the value of boredom.
Yeah.
There are times in my life.
Seriously, yeah.
Oh, there are times in my life I've hit it. It's like, I just want to be bored right now and not know what to do next because the pace of life is so
busy. Well, magic can happen from boredom, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great ideas respond often, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the risk of bordering on some a little more like normal esoteric concepts, I think, ultimately, like spirituality to me, in minus spirituality without the dog budget, just spirituality part of it, just means, in a larger sense, just a transcendence of self. That recognizing that, one, we're insignificant and there's things bigger than us. And so, a lot of ways, that ties in with everything that we've talked about with achieving equanimity. Once you realize that, the insignificance of this all, and that there is something beyond us, that that a lot of peace can be had from that.
Yeah, I think it's like that goes in line with like being a little less self-centered, like, which is part of the culture now, is like it's all about me and my stuff and my things and my thoughts, and like when you can step outside of that and not be so attached to it, it's very peaceful.
Yeah, I think we've definitely gone away from like what's important in life and gotten distracted with like material things and also just being busy. And I heard something the other day that I thought was cool. It was like, what you can look at what's important in life almost by looking at headstones, because like no one's gonna put like, you know, John Doe owned a Ferrari and made $600,000 and could quote The Office.
So like, back squat.
But it's always
212 frame.
two times body weight back.
Yeah. But those kind of things, like, you know, they're not going to make it on headstones, and that's an easy way to kind of think about like, am I distracted or am I like on a path that I, you know, am happy with. So
does your priorities line up with your values,
right,
in a way too?
Yeah, and I think that's part of spirituality, is the way you left the world, the way you wanted to leave it or whatever, like that is the way you interacted with the external world the way internally you'd want to, or mm-hmm. or is there some symbiosis between external and internal? But yeah, it's always things like, you know, father, husband, whatever, you know, those things are the important things. So.
Are they going to talk about your back squat? Are they going to talk about what, like, what love you had to give for the people around you, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've done easily over 100 funerals. I mean, probably close to 200 at this time. And I always sit down with the family before the service and I ask them, what's important to you on this day? And then the closing question I'll usually ask is, what was most important about their faith or the way that they lived their life that you just remember, you know, and has had a great impact on you? There are some families, they can go on for a half an hour with answers.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, though, you've had, just such a, you know, somebody who just lived such a difficult life, didn't have those connections, and like, you know, the answers are more hard to come by.
And that's looking toward a funeral.
And that's just heartbreaking. And my job as a pastor is still to find those redeeming qualities, mm-hmm. you know, that I can highlight, you know, for the family. But yeah, that can be, that's a tough thing to look back and, you know.
Or the person's life was probably not the happiest one,
Think about how we want to be remembered. And I know for me, like, I think about my own life more than anybody else's life. We probably all do.
Yeah.
Like, if I were to add up the minutes and hours that I think about everybody's life, even my kids or my wife's, I probably think about my own life more than others. And I think this fourth discipline or spiritual practice, which is being involved in serving other people and sacrificing for other people, that allows us to get out of our head of always just kind of thinking of ourselves. That if we can kind of think of others for a time and put our focus on others, that's a great discipline and spiritual practice to get into, because it now lessens our selfishness, lessens maybe in a narcissism, it lessens that voice that is always saying that, oh, I got to take care of me and take care of me first. When we put our focus on other people, it allows us now to kind of like break away from that part of us. And if you want something really challenging, like do service without anybody knowing about it.
Yeah.
Like that's, or do service to somebody you don't like.
Right. No.
Yeah, right, yeah. There doesn't need to be a big band every time you do something good for somebody else. Yeah.
On the shoulders.
All that you just put someone's barbell away. You're kind of like, oh.
Thank you.
Nicest person ever.
Thank my family for that.
And so I think if we're like intentionally, and I think CrossFit does this really well. I mean, CrossFit, we do think of other people when we're here and helping, and the work that you guys do to help and support people who are going through times that are difficult.
Yeah.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. That community aspect is, I mean, it's part and parcel of the same concept. Like, you need, community is there to serve, and you're part of it in service of it, right? And ultimately, if it's a well-functioning and harmonious community, then it's built around the service of each person, right? And, like, you can look at that as, like, the family and then the bigger community and the society and the world and all those things. But it comes down to, like, just doing for others, too.
Yeah.
And hopefully, in turn, it's reciprocal, right? And then there's this, like,
right.
You've talked about this a lot, is that mutual wealth.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just yesterday, someone messaged me, and they're like, oh, I lost my job. I'm going to need to, like, this will be my last month or whatever. And, you know, that always stinks. So whenever that happens, I always ask, like, what do you do? What kind of job are you looking for? And then between everybody here, like, usually someone's looking for someone. So just yesterday, I connected two people. And
oh, wow.
I mean, who knows if it will work out. And normally it does. But yeah, that's purely just a power of community and, like, thinking of others. And I think there's very few communities in existence right now, and so it's hard to get that benefit. But if you are a member of the community or a community, there's just endless benefits.
Just a capacity for sincere and genuine compassion
right.
goes a long ways.
Yeah,
I mean, there is some karmic return from that too, doubtless.
Yeah.
And there's so much loneliness. We're just an epidemic of loneliness in the world today, and community is the solution for that.
Loneliness, but at our most busy too.
And most connected. Yeah.
We've never been more connected, but we've never been kind of had higher rates of loneliness.
What's that number? Is that what it is?
Yeah, 150 people.
150 is the limit of what a tribe should be.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at some of the extroverts that can... Well, I'm very introverted, so, like, it takes... I'm playing the long game everywhere I go.
Yeah.
You know, it takes me, like, years to find my way into a place. Yeah. You know, so for those who are more introverted, like, just give it time. Like, that community is going to come. Those connections are going to come. But I am amazed at some people who walk into the gym, like, they're there a week and they know everybody. I'm like, how does that person do that?
Right.
It takes me years. So, we need that community.
One thing that I can kind of tie into what Eric was saying is in regards to compassion towards people is, I think gratitude, and there's very compelling evidence to the scientific benefits of gratitude too, even just sincerely finding some things to be grateful for in your life can result in a lot of mental benefits too. I mean, they've done extensive studies on this, surprisingly. Gratitude and tying in with that compassion. And there's, if you think hard enough, I think just about anyone on this planet can think of some things to be grateful for, even in the most miserable circumstances. And I've implemented it as a practice myself, and I found some great value from it personally too.
Yeah, it's. I think that's almost like a muscle too. The more you look around, or the more you recognize things to be grateful for, the easier it is to find things. To the point, almost the more you do it, it's almost overwhelming.
The easier it is, exactly. Yeah.
So
for sure.
And it works in the opposite direction too.
Yeah.
You start stewing in your misery. Infectious as one of them.
I start with my day with my three miseries. That's a whole different start to the day than with the three things I'm grateful for.
And I love the grateful for God.
It's like, it changes our day.
Yeah.
And then the fifth spiritual practice that I think is so good for us to stay is that we are pursuing wisdom. Right now, knowledge is an abundance. You know, like I can go on my phone, I have access to every single piece of knowledge, right, probably through human history.
Whatever. All human knowledge.
Right? Yeah, we've never had that before. And then the question is, well, are we any more wise because we have that? And so I think pursuing wisdom, you know, knowledge is knowing a tomato is a fruit, and wisdom is knowing not to put it in a salad. Amen. You know, that's kind of like the difference between those two. And so I think when we pursue wisdom, it allows us to slow down in the midst of complex problems. We're not like flying off the handle or coming up with a bad solution to something. But wisdom causes us to slow down and seek a solution. I think wisdom causes us to listen instead of to speak first. We are a speak first, speak loudly world right now. And wisdom, you know, would have us slow down a little bit and probably listen first before responding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't wait to speak, but listen, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I think wisdom is doing that right thing at the right time. There's that passage in Ecclesiastes in the song where it says there's a season for everything. You know, a time to weep and a time to mourn. Well, it's the fool who mourns when it's time, you know, or laughs when it's time to weep and weeps when it's time to mourn. That wisdom is knowing the right moment to do the right thing, the right season to do the right thing, and not getting them confused. Mm. And so I think it even just beginning to pursue wisdom is huge in our culture right now.
Yeah, I think part of, so this is my take, well, part of my take on this is that we kind of all, in a way, innately have that intuition of, especially moral wisdom and that compass, but if we don't have that inner quiet and like inner dialogue, then we miss it, you know, it gets lost in the all the other entanglements of information that you just dump down your head every day. But if you have like that, if you have more of that that calm, inner calm, then you can like hear your intuition more and like trust it. And when you get that message, you know that it's pure. And but it, you can't do that if you don't have, you know, if it's too noisy.
If you're in leadership, you're going to build confidence with your team. If you're in a hospital or a doctor or a nurse, to maintain that kind of like calm in the midst of that, that's huge. You're just going to gain the confidence of those around you and those that you lead if you can lead with some wisdom.
Mm. What's not to do? You said one that was those pillars were great.
Yeah,
you said there was one like no-go.
Yeah, so the one that people try kind of all the time that I don't think that doesn't work at all is we try and do image management on the outside or change the outside, hoping that it's going to change our inside problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at one point Jesus talked about this to the religious leaders. They were like the best dressed, the wealthiest of their day. And he says to them, he says, you can't just clean like the outside of your cup and dish and then the inside's just a mess on the inside. That they were masters of looking great on the outside, but still struggling with all these insecurities and difficulties. And so that's kind of the one that never works, is you cannot solve your inside problems and your inside insecurities, your inside difficulties by making everything look good on the outside. Mm-hmm. Great abs are not gonna fix your inner insecurities. You know, they may have, your inner insecurities may have driven you to that point, but once you get them, those insecurities are still going to be there. You've now hidden them behind something.
You never propelling your great abs, right?
Yeah, right. you know, having the right car, you know, isn't going to solve long-term issues that you may have had with your mom or dad. You know, it's like that. And yet we pursue all these exterior things. That once I get this job, once I get this car, once I get this house, everything's going to be good on the outside or the inside. And we just find that, oh no, I'm just more successful. And I just have a nicer car, but I'm still like a mess on the inside.
But my neighbor.
yeah, right.
House is
shinier
than mine.
That reminds me of almost not necessarily even material things. If you put up a show that everything's fine and you kind of you have an inability to be vulnerable with people, I think that's also kind of what you're talking about, where that's not going to help you.
Yeah.
Like you need to have some sort of you know, vulnerability where you're comfortable showing what's really going on inside, I think, which is, again, when you have people that you're connected to, that's a lot easier. But yeah, I think that's a, like, being vulnerable is also something, like, make sure the inside and the outside.
Yeah, having those close friendships you can share things with.
Right.
Therapy, you know,
right.
Very beneficial for us if we got some of those long-term just insecurities and pains and resentments and kind of unforgiveness that we've held on to on the inside, long-term traumas that we hang into on the inside. Like, those need to be dealt with by going in, being able to talk about them and be healed that way. They just can't be dealt with by saying, oh, I'm going to look better, be more successful on the outside. That's not going to heal.
Perpetually chasing things.
Yeah, that's not going to heal that inside stuff. And I think I see this in churches. I think we see it in the fitness industry, that just because somebody looks great on the outside, it doesn't mean that they've now experienced great healing of some of those traumas and resentments and angers on the inside.
Yeah, I think that's a symptom of a pathology of our culture. We don't tend to really see past that facade. Like, it's almost like that lacking wisdom where it's kind of, if you really look at that, like, you know, whatever, plastic surgery or like chasing the ideal body and like all these things, it's kind of just cut and dry that it's like an impure pursuit. But we, for whatever reason, we hold it up as like a virtuous thing, you know? And it's just so normal. You know, we don't necessarily always see past that facade as a culture.
They see people taking pictures on Instagram, like, you know, whether it's, you know, I'm eating healthier, I'm like spending time with my kids or doing things that, you know, like they'll say that on Instagram, but then in reality, it's not
right.
That at all. And then so everybody thinks, you know, oh, this person's life is
great. They're painting the picture of what they want to show people.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone else is doing the same.
Yeah. One of the biblical wisdoms that helps, personally helps me with this is, you can judge a tree by the fruit it bears. Mm-hmm. So no matter, you know, you call it a fig tree, but if it's bearing thorns, it's not a fig tree. And it's that type of thing with people, I think, a lot of times, is like, regardless of what they're portraying or how they look or how they talk or whatever, there's, you kind of look at what the outcome is with their relationships and what type of trail they leave behind and how people talk about them. And that's more so the information you should use to make decisions on, or at least to have those, I don't want to say judgments, but just be a little more, you know, privy to what's actually going on behind that facade of what you see.
Mm. Yeah, Jesus said, out of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Mm.
You know, like, what comes out of our mouth is mostly going to be kind of what's living inside us. And I know for me, it isn't always a pretty thing. Yeah, and so that's why I need some of these things to work on that inside. And it's and it takes time. Just like building muscle takes time. Muscle is very expensive to build. It takes a lot of time, takes the right food, all that kind of stuff. And inner life is the same thing. So it takes some discipline and it takes some, it's expensive to build a good inner life, but the benefits, the hedge of a good inner life is just so important as we live day to day.
Well, one thing that I think is worth noting is that, I mean, muscle, in building muscle or in developing fitness, is that one of the most important ingredients to it is adherence or compliance to doing it regularly. And I think the same thing can be said for spiritual growth as well, is that it has to be done with regularity. It can't be sporadically done. And that's how you get the most bang for your buck with what you're doing with it.
This was awesome.
Cool.
Very much enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
thank you so much.